Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. It's off the shelf for this Saturday morning, and it is June the 12th, 2010, early in the morning. So happy to have each of you here with us on this sunshiny, beautiful morning. For those of you who are calling in for the first time, I want to introduce myself to you. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And as always, I thank you for your support, and I encourage you not to let another day pass before you pick up a copy of Long Walk Up. Long Walk Up is a very moving and inspirational book that will encourage you, and you need to add this book to your book collection today. You can pick up a copy of Long Walk Up at www.chistell.com. You can also get a copy of Long Walk Up at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Borders, Walmart, etc. If you don't see it on the bookshelf, just ask the clerk for it, and she can order a copy for you, because Long Walk Up is carried by the largest book distributors in the world. And now on this so glorious, blessed day, I am so honored to bring to you a writer. Her name is Pat Simmons. We're so happy to add her to our wonderful list of just the business leaders, the authors, the editors, the publishers, the movers and shakers in the literary industry that we've had here on Off the Shelf. We are honored to add Pat Simmons to that list of those marvelous, marvelous people. For those of you who don't have a prior knowledge of Pat, I'll give you a brief introduction of her. She is just a phenomenal woman who's done many things. She's authored several books, including Talk to Me, Guilty of Love, and we're going to ask her about these books today. Not Guilty of Love. That would make you think. Guilty of Love and Not Guilty of Love and Still Guilty. And many of you probably have seen Pat Simmons' books in offline bookstores, including Walmart. I know myself, I have. Pat Simmons is a graduate of Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts. She is also a wife, and she is a woman who is passionate about genealogy. We'll touch on that topic during today's interview. And her books have won awards and made the bestseller list, so congratulations to her. Pat Simmons is online. I encourage you to go over there now and bookmark her website. She's at Pat Simmons, and that's spelled PatSimmons.net. Again, that's PatSimmons.net. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Pat.
Thank you, Denise, and good morning.
Good morning to you. Are you? When I was doing the research for this interview, I'm like, whoa, she really, and I thank you that we could get you here on Off the Shelf. I'm sure you have a busy schedule with your writing and the marketing and promotion of your books. But first, I wanted to extend again to you a congratulations on the success of each of your books. And which book, Pat, because you've written so many, which book is the first of your books? Which one is the first book, and when did you sit down and write that very first book?
Well, Denise, thank you so much. I accept the blessings that you have extended my way. I'm at this point, I only have 4 books published, and I know several books is more than that, so I'm receiving that blessing. Guilty of Love was the first book published for me.
Okay.
I did not know how that book would affect readers, not really sure if people would get my sense of humor, but the Lord told me to write that book as far as the subject matter, and I did not want to do that because abortion is controversial. I didn't want someone to feel guilty for undergoing one, but I didn't also want to promote it.
Okay.
So for that reason, I really was not comfortable in writing about that subject.
Okay.
But the Lord told me to write it, and I did. If I had not, I don't doubt that if I had written 20 other books that they may not have been successful until I wrote the one that God told me to write.
Wow.
And Yeah, and there's some things that happened with that book that just confirmed that I was on the right track. The first one was that the first book didn't get proper editing, and I was horrified. But despite that, I had record sales, and the Lord let me see. See, it wasn't about you anyway. It was about me.
Wow.
And then
go ahead.
I'm sorry. Well,
no, go
the
ahead.
The second thing is that when I started writing Guilty, I was already knee-high in genealogy research for my family, and I had to put aside that to start working on the book. I had to build a strong black man to be able to handle his family's genealogy. And as a consequence of that, he is the 10th generation descendant of a royal African tribe, and Arrogant is his middle name. But what I found out with Guilty of Love, and this is how the Lord just blessed me, and by the way, the edition that is now in paperback has been edited, so I don't want your listeners to say, oh, I won't get that book. It has been edited, and I thank God for that. But as I was adding characters to the story, I knew that I wanted Park Jameson, the sixth mother, to be named Charlotte.
Okay.
And one thing that I do, which is kind of strange, I pull some of my ancestors out and put them as characters in my books, and then at the end of my books, I give a brief biography about the characters in hopes that people that are reading the books will identify with some of them and realize that we are related, and that has happened in a few instances. So my grandmother's name was Charlotte, so I plugged in Charlotte, and the men in the family are the Jamesons. So I had, you know, Malcolm and Park and Cameron Jameson, and the father, of course, is Park the Fifth, and the mother is Charlotte Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
As I continued my search on my mother's side of the family, I could not find my great-great-grandmother. And I realized that her name was Charlotte, too, and that's why my grandmother was named Charlotte. I'm like, okay, but her last name was Wilkerson. Could not find her. Could not find the Charlotte Wilkerson. Could not find the chick. So I asked for help from some of my genealogy friends, gave them the clues, and I'm like, well, we know she lived. We know my great-grandfather lived. Where is Charlotte Jameson? Where is William Jameson?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Wilkerson. Come to find out that Charlotte took on her enslaved master's name. And it wasn't Charlotte Wilkerson. It was Charlotte Jameson, just like the name of my character in my book.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, how freaked out is this?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You know, Jameson, when I picked Jameson for these people's name, I had no idea that I was a descendant of a Robert Jameson that enslaved my people. Had no clue.
Wow, that is, oh my goodness.
So
oh my God.
So the Lord has showed me that, yeah, I was on the right track.
Wow, isn't this, oh my God, it's not even just for you, and this is something that for myself also as an author, the story also, it's not just for the reader, it's also things for the author. The author will have things that about themselves that they'll learn or discover. Of course, you with the genealogy, that really is like a wow thing. You will learn things about yourself as you write story. So it's not just for the reader. I think writing is also for the author. And I also think writing is very, very therapeutic. Pat, for our off-the-shelf listeners who may not be familiar with your books, can you just give them some background? I know you said the Guilty of Love, you didn't want to write the book at first. You didn't want to deal with the subject of abortion, but you felt the Lord telling you to write that book nevertheless, and you had confirmation that you were on the right track. Other than that, because it sounds like each of the books are connected. It's a series of books for our listeners who are not familiar with them, can you just give us a brief background? I know you talked about the genealogy and the families in the book and how you later come to find out that the name of some of the characters even were factual for people in your own genealogy. But can you just tell us how each of the titles, they all had a word guilty in them, except for Talk to Me. But can you tell us briefly, our listeners, about the books? Are they a series of books that follows relationships from generation to generation? If you could just give us a brief background, I appreciate it.
Oh, sure. Thank you for asking. If you'll just allow me to just start with Talk to Me, because that's not a part of the series. Talk to Me was my first book deal, and it's built on the premise that Noel Richardson is perfect, but degrees, wealth, and education doesn't define a man. As women that are looking for that soulmate, what is it that we're looking for that will make that man the most appealing to you? My character lost his hearing as a result of a fireworks explosion. One friend died, one friend suffered burns, but Noel Richardson lost his hearing. So he's navigating between two worlds, actually three worlds, the hearing and the deaf, as well as being a black man in a deaf world. And so basically it shows some of the prejudices the hearing world has against the deaf community, and also some of their prejudices too, because they have issues as well. So just to make a long story short, because I know you asked me about the Guilty series, he falls in love with a church interpreter, and she asks him, how do you want me to talk to you? Do you want me to sign, or, you know, do you want me to talk? And he says, no, talk to me. I love to read your lips, because he's an avid lip reader. And so it is truly a romance story that talks about a black man, a strong black man that knows who he is despite his limitations. And so that's Talk to Me, and the readers can always go to my website and read excerpts.
Okay.
Now the Guilty of Love, like I said, was my first book. I really didn't know the type of reception I would have. The main character is Chaney Reynolds. She is a graduate of Duke University in North Carolina that moves back to St. Louis. Park Jameson VI is a descendant of a royal African tribe. His family's history has been documented throughout 10th generations that started with Parky, who was the prince of the Dimanti tribe in Africa. And he ran off with the largest slaveholder's daughter, the largest slaveholder in, I think it's Maryland, and his only daughter. Mm-hmm. And she becomes a fugitive. And so they named their first son Parker. And after the Emancipation Proclamation, they dropped the R to get the name Park, which means the first one removed from slavery. So I go into all that stuff, and the readers are fascinated with that. But basically, the characters from Guilty of Love kind of move over to Not Guilty of Love, because I end the story with Grandma Beebe, who is a sweet old lady by day but a gun-toting neighborhood terror by night. She don't take nothing. Move over, Medea.
I was getting ready to say.
Grandma Beebe was on the street way before Medea. Grandma Beebe
could
give Medea a run for her money, because this is someone that I'm aspiring to be when I'm 60-plus, because she won't tell her age. But this is a woman who does all-night dance-a-thons, and really she is Chaney. She becomes Chaney's sanctuary. She's her surrogate grandmother, and she pulls Chaney out of the reclusive life that she started to build up for herself. Mm. Every time Grandma Beebe hits the page, every time, get ready to laugh. I'm serious. I love this woman. She's 70-something. She does these all-night dance-a-thons. She drags Chaney into it. She has no wrinkles on her face. She is someone that has the personality. You know, we all have a Grandma Beebe. We have a woman in our family that's
yes.
like,
an aunt or somebody, yes, a great aunt or somebody, yes.
Exactly. And the thing about it is they're always right. That's what makes this so bad. They are always right. They speak their mind.
Yes.
They think they're young. They act young. And they're just wonderful. They have so much wisdom. But the thing about Grandma Bebe that makes somebody raise their eyebrow is no matter what she's wearing, or she could have on designer jeans or a house coat.
Mm-hmm.
But her signature is her army polished Stacy Adams shoes. Now, and there's a story behind that. But she ended Guilty of Love because she found out that Chaney's father actually killed her husband. So that's how Guilty of Love ends, and everybody wanted to know, what did she do? What did she do? What did she do? Plus, there's the secondary characters, which you will fall in love with, which is Park's brother Malcolm and Hallison. They fall in love, but they're having some issues. So Not Guilty, I pull Grandma Bebe over to Not Guilty of Love, and Not Guilty of Love is Malcolm and Hallison's story. And the premise of their story is one man, one woman, one God, and one big problem. And you know, that's built on the story. Everybody knew Malcolm loved Hallison. The reader knew, the family knew. You can ask somebody on the street corner. Everybody knew Malcolm loved Hallison. There was no doubt in anybody's mind. And isn't that what we all want, is to have a strong black man that we know loves us? Well, she had it. But she also walked away from God. So when she returned to God after a long, you know, struggle, God told her to, basically God was saying, welcome home, it's time for you to choose. The man who loves you or the man who died for you.
Wow.
Yeah, that's deep. And her friends don't help because she, you know, she made that choice. She was giving up what every woman wanted. And so her friends like, how do you know it was God? What did he say? Girl, ain't no way in the world. But she had to be obedient. But, you know, just like God told Abraham, he would be the father of many nations. And then he said, not too many chapters later, I want you to sacrifice Isaac to me. You know, to the human mind, it's like something's not right here. What do you mean I'm going to be the father? You want me to kill my only son? But, you know, God has a way. If we're willing to give up to him, he can recycle those things for us and give it back to us. So in Not Guilty of Love, it's their struggle, Hallison's decision, and her struggle to walk by faith and not by sight.
Okay.
And, of course, Grandma Bebe's in the first chapter. She shoots Chaney's father. So there you go.
Oh, my goodness.
The woman, yeah, chapter one, the woman is already in jail, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
But you're gonna love Grandma Bebe. She is a hot mess. I thought about killing her off, but people are like, no. The woman will probably live to like 117 years old. But she follows the characters and still guilty because some people don't learn their lessons the first time. So she is in still guilty. She is on trial. So what she does, she brings in her contingency of the Red Hat Society women. I mean, she basically takes over the courtroom, takes over the courthouse with her, you know, her support group and, you know, her friends on the walkie-talkie. Well, where's the group from Kankakee, Illinois? Well, the group from, you know, Springfield, Missouri is already on their way. You know, we're going to need more parking space for the tour buses. And, you know, she's just a hot mess. I love her.
Oh, It's a mix of, well, definitely with the shootings and whatnot, it's a mix of, it sounds like intrigue. There's some comedy in it as well, and some deep issues and inspirational. So you get a mix of and also spiritual issues. One of the things I wanted to ask you, and this goes back to when I was a young girl and reading novels voraciously, there was, and I can't remember her name. There was one Christian author who I absolutely loved her work, and I for some reason the name Catherine just popped up, but I can't remember her last name. And she wrote, she would have one major female character in her stories, and she'd be a very strong woman, in the books. But I'm going back years ago. But other than that, when I would read Christian novels, they were seemed flat and boring, almost because they didn't show like real life situations. You didn't hear about, like when you said the first book, you didn't hear about like an abortion or somebody having sex before they got married. You didn't hear about that kind of thing. It's like it didn't exist. So it was like a flat story. I wanted to ask you, how do you keep enough conflict, and obviously you do, at least if our listeners can hear, and the passion that you have for your stories, and as an author, when an author has a passion, that's a good book for the story themselves, that the readers can also enjoy it. But how do you keep enough conflict, Patton, and exciting scenes in your stories without losing the focus to provide inspiration to the readers?
Well, you know what, and that's a real good question. I had a hard time getting published through the traditional white publishers only because I felt that after they gave me the stipulations, what was there left to write? It made me feel that they didn't have homosexuality in their church. They didn't have divorce in their church. They didn't have people struggling or women struggling from abortion. They didn't have any wayward children. They didn't have those issues. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, hold up here. What planet are you living on? And I just felt, you know, as part of a Christian ministry, our job is to minister to women that have had abortion or women who have had family members in prison, men who have suffered or who are struggling with homosexuality. That's where the ministry comes in. And I think any Christian book that doesn't minister to issues that people are dealing with really miss the boat, because Christian fiction, I use the word Christian because of two things. When publishers ask me to write a book and I put Christian on there, they know, okay, Pat's not going to write any sex things. I go, okay, don't have to worry about that issue. But also, it's inspiration because I don't want people to pick up the book and feel they're getting beat up. And that was the issue I had with abortion. So I had to write that book for women who felt that they made the right decision not to feel convicted. But I also had to write the book for people that felt that they didn't make the right decision to know that regardless of what you've done, God is here to help you.
Right.
And I have to write the books where I'm not beating people over the head for things that you've done. I mean, come on. Christ came to save the sinners. If we were already saved, what was the use of him dying on the cross? Come on.
Right, right.
And I think as Christians, we leave church and forget that there's a beggar on the street that may need a hamburger. Or there's a woman that has committed a sin that just needs to know that God loves you and you can repent. And it's going to be okay. You know, and we as Christians need to remember that it's all about ministering to people that are hurting. And so when I, because I come from a news background, I'm issue driven anyway. I like issues, you know, and so abortion was an issue. Feel guilty, I'm looking at issues. A book that I just finished, my character served time in prison, because many people don't know that women are the fastest growing prison population. What are we going to do for these women when they come out of prison? How are we going to deal with those children who have parents in prison? So those are my issues, but because I deal with quote-unquote heavy-duty issues, I have to litter my my storyline with all these comedy scenes to lighten the load.
Oh, okay.
Across, I have to do that. And so by sprinkling or littering those things in my books, you won't get depressed. But I have people tell me that, you know, once they get into the character, they're rooting for the character, they start crying, and then, bam, you know, I have a Grandma BB scene in their
face. Oh, okay.
And they're laughing because they weren't expecting that. And, you know, so I have to have that. So that's how I deal with the inspiration. I always tell people, you go to church to be preached to. You don't buy a book to be preached to. And,
okay.
And that is the opposite side of the flat issue. You can't relate to them. But I tell people, they know when God is speaking to the characters, because God will say something like, I was writing last night, and one of my characters gave this homeless person a ride in her car, and she's thinking, oh, my God, what have I done? This man is going to kill me. And he says, I'm harmless. And, you know, she's like, and God speaks to her, believe him. You know, so that's how I write my Christian fiction. She's like, okay, God, you said it, so I can believe it, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, that's how I write my Christian fiction, where God just speaks. You know, and so God is saying, believe him.
Okay.
And so that's how I do it.
How will, for our listeners who, let's say, they pick up Guilty of Love, I know you said you're not writing a story to condemn anyone who has made a decision, but this is what I'm assuming. Just like if you go to a Tyler Perry play and you just watch the story unfold, you will learn, okay, that wasn't the right thing to do. You just by watching the other characters' lives unfold, and then you can know, and that's the better thing to do. In your books, you said, I know you use the comedy, a mixture of that. How does Guilty of Love and that story, the first one in the series, how would that, if somebody's reading that today for the first, how's that going to inspire them? If you were to say to somebody specifically, and how is that going to enlighten them? What would they come away with? And you can say, I can tell you that this is what you will be enlightened about from when you put that book down that you might not have known before you picked it up to start reading it.
A couple of things. Guilty of Love is built on the premise, how do you know that the most important decision in your life is the right one, regardless of what it could be? If it's not, are you ready for the fallout?
Wow.
And just in case you need help along the way, you know, whether a person is church going or not, they are aware that certain people are put in our lives to help us along. It may not be someone that you talk to every day or all the time, but you know there's always a Mrs. Green that you can go and talk to when you have problems. Or it's always just that man at the corner drugstore.
Oh, my goodness.
That always gives you the words of wisdom, that knows nothing else about your life, but just always gives you that right thing to say. That's what God does when we have to make a heavy-duty decision and it's not the right one. God is long-suffering, and he loves us. And when we make those decisions, we still have to pay the cost. But God puts the person in our lives to help us make it back to him. So when they finish Guilty, and that's any of my books, I want people to close the book and say, that was a great story. And if God did it for them, God can forgive me. Or God could bring me back. Or it's okay because God loves me too. I have also had readers mention on Amazon in the reviews, they said, you know, when Pat Simmons gets through, she done taught us something that we didn't even know we were being taught, you know. And so even with genealogy, people say that they want to, you know, maybe talk to their grandparents or their, you know, or find out about their great-grandparents. And, you know, I have a marriage certificate from 1884 that's notarized for my great-great-grandparents.
Oh, my goodness.
I want people to be curious about their ancestors because they are the ones who have the stories to tell.
Mm.
And let me just interject this real quick that, you know, has nothing to do with Guilty. But by me doing my genealogy and learning about my family, I was blessed to have my great-grandmother until she was 97. Mm-hmm. But just doing the research, I remember I had a job, and I was it was my night to clean the bathrooms. And my husband was like, no, uh-uh. You have a degree, and you're going to clean somebody's bathroom? And I thought about my ancestors, you know, in the fields working 12 hours a day, my ancestor women being raped, but they survived. And I said to myself, who am I that I cannot clean a bathroom?
Yeah.
And my ancestors were in the field, male and female, no telling what they went through.
Mm.
Well, my great-great-grandmother was an enslaved woman.
Mm.
And I'm like, who am I that I can't clean the bathroom? Girl, let me just tell you, for the record, let it go down on the record, that was the best cleaning bathroom I've had in the store. Let me go on record.
Oh, God.
I cleaned that bathroom because I realized that I am no better than my ancestors, and they paved the way for me to have a job, number one, to have a job. Because when I was growing up, my mother had to pass as white to get a job when they wouldn't hire black people. So, you know, our ancestry helps us know who we are and lets us do things with pride.
I want to ask you. Go ahead.
No, and I was just going to say, and to go on with our bad self.
I'll tell you something. I was actually just recently looking up some information on Alex Haley when you were touching on genealogy when he wrote Roots, and that, I mean, it just, people still study their genealogy based on the story that he wrote, and that we saw how powerful knowing your history, just how, oh, my goodness, how powerful that is. He said when, I think it was his grandmother would tell stories, he's like, are these stories true? And she's like, yeah. And so he started researching to find out these are true stories. So how did you get started in genealogy? I have a friend who does it, and she said it's very time-consuming, but it's very rewarding as you find out things. And I have a third cousin who took it back to our family, back to the 17th century, but again, very time consuming. But I wanted to ask, I wanted to ask you, how did you get started? When did you get started? Like, how many years have you been doing it? And how do you weave? You told us a little earlier, but how do you weave genealogy in your books? Are there characters who study genealogy in your books? How do you weave it into your stories? And how do you, in your real actual life, when did you get started doing it? And how long have you been studying it in your own family?
Denise, you are an excellent host. Your questions are right on point. I just love them. I got started, I used to do radio years ago before I moved into television. And one of the guys that I interviewed was an anchor here in St. Louis, and he had did his genealogy, and I interviewed him about his book, Honey Island. That interview turned out to be such a blessing for me because he went back to the TV station and talked me up, and they created a job for me.
Wow.
And I worked that job for 10 years until last year when they did the cut. So I'm thankful for that. But he is the one who sparked my interest. My great-grandmother was 97 when she died. And a lot of us really don't care about the past. It's boring. It's, you know, you talk to my daughter, it's boring. They don't care. My husband said, let the dead rest in peace.
Yeah.
They don't care. But I talked to my great-grandmother who had a strong mind. Her mind was good. But I failed to ask her the right question. So when she passed away, I put that aside, and I had to take care of my grandmother who passed away a couple years ago at the age of 89, and I still wasn't ready to let her go. But I took the obituary, and so the obituary is a good point, if the obituary is correct, and you'll soon find out if it's not. But on that obituary, I actually took it and found out that my great-grandmother, now my grandmother was a twin, but on that obituary, I found out that she had a brother, Ellis. So I start researching Ellis. Two strange things. Remember I told you about me finding my great-grandmother and finding out that her name was really the name of my character?
Right.
Okay. Here's another one. used that obituary, and I started to look up an Ellis Brown. Last name common, first name not that common. I went on rootsweb.com and went on the death Social Security page.
Mm-hmm.
There was 150 Ellis Brown, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, do I want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
I knew he lived in Kansas City, Kansas. That's all I knew. I started going through 150. Bam! I found Ellis Brown died
mm-hmm.
in Kansas City, Kansas, 100 years old.
Wow.
He had died 5 years before I started my genealogy research, right down Highway 70 in Kansas.
Mm.
So I started Googling obits, trying to find his obits. Bam! There was a full-page article. 100-year-old man perishes in house fire.
Oh, my goodness.
Found the funeral home, listed all his children, contacted the funeral home. They put me in contact with my cousins. I'm about ready to shout. I'm finding
Oh, yes.
So I called the man. He's like, oh, you're Aunt Minerva's daughter. No, as a matter of fact, I'm her great-granddaughter. When I talked to them, they had no idea that their father was a twin. I was telling
wow.
them stuff they didn't know. And I'm just like, oh, man, I found them, but they knew nothing.
Wow. Isn't that something?
So,
oh, my God.
It is, you know, so I pick up stuff and, you know, I lay it down. So I dabble in genealogy here and there. But to fast forward to a question about how I use genealogy in my research, while I was researching my family, and here's a good one. I can't wait to write this because the Guilty series is now, I've now extended that to 7 books. I know, it's just so much, and the fan base is there. But here's a tidbit that you want to know how I incorporate it. I am working on the guilty parties because, you know, God, you know, troublemakers, God can conquer by dividing. You know how you break up the troublemakers and you can divide and conquer. So that's
mm-hmm.
the guilty parties I'm working on. But I'm also working on guilty by association, and I decided to tackle, remember, I'm an issue-driven author,
mm-hmm.
to deal with the angry black man. Something has to be done to help our angry black man.
Mm-hmm.
So the premise on guilty by association is that there's these two brothers. It's Kevin Kidd, and there's a reason why they call him Kidd Jameson, and his brother, Aaron Ace, and there's a reason why they call him Ace Jameson. Their father did not marry their mother.
Mm-hmm.
He had another family and other kids. So, you know, he's just a rolling stone. But their father had the audacity to make sure they carried the last name Jameson. So, you know, here's this name Jameson. It continues in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're angry. They feel that he has a lot of nerve. He came around a couple of times during their lifetime
mm-hmm.
and to make sure they had his last name. So they're angry. You know, why didn't they marry their mother? I mean, they're angry. They have a basis to be angry.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, people that have read the Guilty series said, uh-uh, they come to St. Louis Park, it's going to work them over because he ain't going to stand for it. But, you know, it's so funny because these characters are so real. I have people, they go to the same restaurant that Park ate at and order the same food. I'm like, come on, y'all, it ain't that serious.
Yeah.
But in my research, I'm looking for things, and I picked up the 1860 morbidity book in Mississippi because I just wanted to know what people died of in 1860 because on my mother's side, my family came from Mississippi, and that's a whole different chapter.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to know how many of us were tarred and feathered and lynched, okay?
Mm.
But I was finding out, you know, people were 6 months old and they died of, you know, 74 years old died of. And just kind of looking, I found one gunshot wound. I'm like, okay, now was this a black person shooting another black person or what? But when I got to the last name of N, I was not prepared for what I found. If your name was N to the last name Zachary, if you were a slave, they gave you a last name when you died, and it was Negro. That was your name.
Are you serious?
I am serious. It's stuff like that that you will not believe. And I'm like, wow, this is perfect. I can put this into Guilty by Association. It has nothing to do with my family, but it was a fact that was just so interesting, I couldn't let it die. So here you got these two angry black men, and they're complaining about they're going to change their last name. Because, you know, what is Jameson? And they meet this old lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she tells them the importance of their last name.
Wow.
And she tells them your last name could be Negro by the hundreds of others that have died before you. And they had no last name. But you have a last name, and it's Jameson. And even if your last name is a slave owner's name, that's still a name, because that builds character, and you need to find out what that name means. And even if your name is a name from a slaveholder, it still attaches you to the wealth of that slaveholder. So that's how I weave in that information into the storyline, where it teaches you something. The person that finished reading that book maybe won't be as angry as they were before when they read that book, because they're learning something about genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
But they're learning, they're getting that inspiration too. So what I just told you is a conversation that I would put in the book as far as weaving that genealogy into the storyline.
Okay, and I can tell just from the passion in your voice from the start of this interview to now that your characters are anybody listening to Pat Simmons here on Off the Shelf this morning can hear the passion in her voice. And when an author has that much passion in their voice when they're talking about the stories that they've written or their characters, those characters are very much alive, and that will make it even that easier for the reader to connect with the characters, the plot, the storyline, and to walk away blessed. You're going to come away with something because Pat has it in her, and she's sharing it with you, and you can hear it in her voice. For those who are just maybe tuning in to the show today, we are speaking with Pat Simmons, and she is a best-selling author. She has written 7 books in the Guilty series. As some of her book titles are one story that she wrote that was in a best-selling anthology, Talk to Me, Guilty of Love, Not Guilty of Love, and Still Guilty. Her books are in bookstores, offline and online bookstores around the country. I've seen her books in Walmart. You can go there today and pick up a couple of copies of her books. Pat Simmons is a graduate of Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts. She is a wife, and she is passionate about genealogy. Her books have won awards and, again, made the bestseller list. She is online. I encourage you to write this down. You can even stop over now as you listen to the interview and check out her website. She has pictures up there of her family through her studies of her genealogy. Go over there and check them out and read about her books. Pat's online at www.patsimmons.net, and that's spelled PatSimmons. Again, that's patsimmons.net. As we come down to the last 15 minutes of this interview, I want to make sure that for Off the Shelf listeners that we discuss the latest book that Pat is working on. If you could just tell us a little bit, Pat, about the new book you're working on, when our readers and listeners can expect to see it on the market, and without giving it away, if you could just give them a glimpse, like a little peek as to what the book you're working on now is about.
Well, Still Guilty came out in April, and that's with Chaney's brother. And remember I told you, no, wait a minute, I'm getting ahead of myself. I know too many of the Guilty books, so I'm getting ahead of myself. This is Still Guilty deals with Chaney's brother, 3 men in her lives, and they're all affected by her. Chaney's husband, Park, found out that he may have a son out there before he got married, an illegitimate son. He puts a private detective on it to find his son. After 2 books, his son is located, but it's too late. His son has been adopted. The law says you have severed your ties, it's too late, you should have been around, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Forget it. But, you know, God is above the law, and he can overturn any decision a man makes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just watching God work and still guilty for Park. Rainey, her twin brother, is bitter. You know how someone may offend you and you kind of snap and take it out on other people because you allow it to fester?
Yes.
Well, you know, he needed help. He was for family, but because of what someone else did, he just, you know, lashed out at other people. God put a woman in his life that he didn't really like, but she was beautiful, which her beauty drew him. But everything she said, he disagreed with, or let him tell you, she disagreed with everything he said.
Mm-hmm.
So God puts her in his life to be a healing balm if he receives her.
Okay.
And then it's Chaney's father with the hit-and-run accident. You know, people say the sins of the father, but if God is trying to talk to you and you ain't listening, God knows who to talk to make you listen, and sometimes we pay for other people's, you know, problems, and it's not fair, but hey, we are still paying for Adam and Eve, okay? And that's just the way it is. So sometimes we suffer because of other people. You know how when you're in grade school, people tell you, if you don't tell who threw that eraser, you all going to miss the recess?
Yeah.
You know, come on. You either speak up or you all going down together.
Mm.
And so, you know, if God is talking to you and you ain't talking or you're not listening, then someone, God could use someone else to get your attention, and you really don't want that to happen. You know, you don't want everybody to miss recess because you ain't going to confess.
Right.
So that is still guilty, and I have a paragraph if you want me to read an excerpt. I'm always prepared. If not, we can keep going.
Oh, please do, because I tell you, I read up on some of the book in your writing, and oh my goodness, you don't fool around, man. You get right into the story from the start.
You.
Please do before the close grace our listeners with an excerpt from one of your books. You're a very talented, gifted author.
Thank you. I received those blessings. This is the latest book. This is out of Still Guilty, and this is Chapter 2. I'm setting this up. This is a scene between Chaney and her brother. Dr. Rainey Reynolds didn't understand his twin sister, Chaney Reynolds Jameson. She was sleeping with the enemy, not in bed, but she was guilty by association. He was seconds away from demanding to know where her family allegiance laid as they engaged in a fierce stare-down duel. They were outside their parents' home, which was tucked behind a tree-lined block on Westmoreland Avenue in the Citroen West End, an affluent area within St. Louis City. The 15-room, three-story stone and brick mansion was daunting. Once a person entered, the feeling of being swallowed up wasn't an exaggeration. Rainey hovered 4 inches over Chaney, but that didn't intimidate her. Not much of anything did. Naturally beautiful, people wouldn't believe she was as tough and stubborn as she was. Remember the family pack? He blinked, losing the battle. Frowning, Chaney squirted. Nope. She jutted her chin. Okay, let me spit it out. She jutted her chin higher and folded her arms, indicating she had time for an explanation. The unspoken rule, he stated, hissing. If somebody talks about your mama, it's fighting words. Or if somebody jumps your sister or brother, we all fight. We are 33 years old. I've long ago put away childish things. Chaney turned to terminate their conversation. As she began to step down the brick-covered circular steps, he reached out and stopped her, causing Chaney to teeter on the edge. Glancing over his shoulder, Rainey double-checked their privacy. He wanted to make sure their bickering hadn't summoned their parents' housekeeper, Mrs. Maddie, to investigate the disturbance. It's the same concept, twin. We should stick together in this crisis, he interlocked his hands. Traitor, he bit out with venom, then added a few profane words which forced Chaney to blink. Tilting his head, Rainey gave her a look that was mean enough for a burglar to think twice about breaking and entering. You don't get it, do you? If my so-called friend hurt one of my family members, it would be over, and my cut would be clean. Cheney sighed and offered a strained smile. Ever heard of forgiveness? No, Rainey wanted to shake his sister until her dead brain cells came alive or fell out. He saw nothing wrong with befriending a woman who wanted their father dead. He didn't care that Cheney had moved next door to Mrs. Beacon, the a.k.a. Grandma B.B., who fabricated a lie that their upstanding father was a hit-and-run driver who mowed down her husband. Who knew that Mrs. Beacon would take it a step further and try to harm their father? Now their father had to go on trial for an alleged hit-and-run fatal accident, which was ridiculous. It was mind-boggling that Cheney still maintained a friendship with the lady. Not when it comes to my enemies, Cheney. I happen to be selective about extending amnesty. Rainey tried to control his temper and non-existent high blood pressure, a condition that would surely surface once the trial portraying his father as a murderer was over. God's trying to get someone's attention. No, make that a whole lot of folks' attention. Cheney never wavered. Well, the Lord's got it, because every media outlet in the area is probably enjoying this. Rainey, this is not about you, he grunted in disgust, jingling his keys to his black metallic BMW. That's where you're wrong, twin. This is about the Reynolds family, our reputation and our integrity. I will not believe our father intentionally ran over Mrs. Beacon's husband with his car and then cowardly left a man to die. Not only can he lose his medical license, he can go to prison for something he didn't do. It's a good thing that bullet that grazed his shoulder, or he would have been dead. That's just a portion of chapter two.
And Oh my goodness!
Oh my goodness!
You very good reader, and very. I encourage our listeners again to go over to Pat Simmons' website, www.patsimmons.net, PatSimmons.net. You can read excerpts from her books there, find out about more. She got pictures of her family, her genealogy. That is a website that will wow you. I encourage you to go over there today, bookmark her website, keep up with her latest book. Her new book just came out in April of this year, and you can get her books online and offline. Pat Simmons, as we just come down, we got 6 minutes left. Wanted to ask you, have you ever thought about hearing you talk about your books, reading your books, reading the excerpts of your books. Have you ever thought about or tried to get any of your books optioned for a major motion picture? They would make a perfect movie.
Well, you know, a lot of people said that about Guilty, and I have a couple of guys say, I could be Park. No, I could be Park. I'll just leave that in the Lord's hands. And because, as you know, as an author yourself, that is such an honor for mm-hmm. your book to even be considered as an option, because the retainer fee is worth it.
Mm-hmm.
But I just write a story. Some authors write a book in hopes of making it into a screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
I just write a story. And if someone picks up my story and feels that they could adapt this to a screenplay or a play or a screenplay or a movie, I would be so honored. But I guess that's just whatever God has on the horizon for me.
Okay.
I just want the story to continue, and let what'll be will be.
Okay. I want to make sure our listeners who themselves would like to be in the shoes that you're wearing right now one day, and they're hopeful writers. There were where other people were years ago. With only 5 minutes left, could you briefly offer some advice to listeners who want to, Pat, find a publisher, want to one day be a published author? What advice or tips would you give them to help them bring that to reality?
It's not enough time, as you know, for that, but let me just say briefly, the day before Guilty of Love hit the shelves, I got my last rejection letter on Guilty, the day before.
Wow.
And that let me know that it's really in the eye of the editor. all of those editors that turn down your manuscript, they are not the right ones. Your feelings will be hurt when you get those rejection letters. We are emotional beings. I don't care what people tell you. Take it, you know, with your chin up. We will get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But that right editor, that editor that enjoys your work, has not picked up your story. So continue to submit. Also, invest in a good editor. Learn from my mistake. After Guilty of Love, I made sure that I pay for an editor. She is not cheap. But my editor, she knows my way of thinking. And she'll say, Pat, you don't mean this. Or, Pat, change chapter 3 to chapter 1. She's an excellent editor. And it's all about getting your foot in the door. Invest the money into a good editor. I'm not talking about a bootleg. That's my husband's term. A bootleg editor. You know, we're talking about someone. My editor... My editor has edited manuscripts for New York Times bestselling authors, and she works for an editing house. Make sure your editor comes with credentials. It's worth it. And pay what you can pay. The second thing is buy books. How to Write a Romance Novel is a good book. It's a dummy book. I love dummy books because I'm a dummy when it comes to certain subjects, and they really break it down. Even though you're going to write, you may not write romance, that book has a good book as far as structure. Get grammar books. Get style books. I just bought James Scott Bale's book when I was at a convention, a book on plotting and self-editing. I thought it was going to tell me about self-editing, but it's content self-editing. Just write. Go to conventions. Go to writers' conventions where a writer can put an arm around you and encourage you, where you can pitch your idea to an editor and they can say, I don't like it because, or, you know, that might work if you do this. You and write, make sure you put yourself on a schedule. Don't write today and maybe write next month. Put yourself on a deadline as if you were offered a deal. You need to know how long it's going to take you to write a manuscript. Yeah. Write 8 hours a day and see how long it takes you to complete a book. Write it. That's what I did, and it took me 4 months to write Guilty. That was basically the rough draft, and then it took a year. But write for 8 hours a day until that manuscript is finished, and that's really going to be your rough draft. You need to know if it's going to take you 4 months, a year. You need to find out how long it's going to take an author, because that's what you will be one day.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Oh, thank you for sharing that with us, Pat. We are coming down to less than 2 minutes left in today's show, which has blown by. I tell you, every time I do these shows, they go so fast. I always have like 15, 20 other questions that I was going to ask the author. The last couple of interviews that I never get around to, we only have 90 seconds left. I just thank Pat Simmons for being here with us so much today, for the excerpt that she read. I cannot stress this enough to our off-the-shelf listeners. You need to go to her website. You need to go to her website today. I would do it right now. Again, it's www.patsimmons.net. It is one of the best author websites I have seen. You got to go there. You got to go there and read her excerpts and tell your friends about the interview, to listen to the interview again and again and again. Visit her website and go out and get her books. Her books are in bookstores. You can get them in Walmart. You can get her books anywhere on off or offline. Her latest book came out in April, and that's still Guilty, April of this year. That book is new. Go get a copy. She's continuing to write. You hear the passion in her voice, and what a wonderful, wonderful guest she was. I thank Pat for being here with us. I thank each
thank
of our
listeners. Thank you.
Oh, and I thank each of our listeners here. Please come back next Saturday when we will have another special guest here at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time in the morning. Remember, you're so valued, so truly blessed, and so very well, highly thought of. Go out and live your dreams. See you same time next Saturday at 11 o'clock. And, Pat, I will shoot you an email.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.